Welcome into the Rockies Insider. I'm your host, Patrick Lyons. On the 30th anniversary of the first regular season game at Coors Field, hopefully some of you got an opportunity to get out to the ballpark this afternoon, or will get out to the ballpark. Wanted to give you this special audio-only edition on a couple things off the top of my head, and some of it has to do with the near future of Major League Baseball and some changes that may be coming in the next couple seasons. Commissioner Rob Manfred just spoke in this past week at Sports Business Journal's 2025 CAA World Congress of Sports. And the future of softball, because believe it or not, professional softball is here. And we'll see if it's to stay. But game one ever at Coors Field, asterisk, because it's not the first game at Coors Field, it's first regular season game. And what's the difference? You don't play spring training games at a ballpark. Well, they do in other cities, in more warmer weather cities or in domes. They have a nice little soft open, just a little bit. Well, on March 31st, 1995, there was still a work stoppage. At that point, it was a lockout. The owners were locking out players and the Players Association. And so there were replacement players that were going out, and they were mostly minor league guys that, frankly, didn't really have much of an opportunity to ever play in the majors. And so they crossed those picket lines. And the Rockies did play two games against the Yankees. It's more like players in Rockies uniforms played players in Yankees uniforms, and players loosely defined. I mean, look, these were all professionals, but even still, they were career minor league guys. Some of them were in A ball, some in double A, and many of them never made it to the majors. And those that did were shunned. But two games, March 31st, April 1st, some guys parading themselves as Rockies and some parading themselves as Yankees. But we're not going to talk about that. We're not going to worry about that. It's 30th anniversary of Dante Bichette doing that thing in the 14th inning, a walk-off home run in what was the opening day at that point on April 26th because of that work stoppage. They ramped up really quickly to try to get 144 games in during that 1995 season. Two-run dinger to give Colorado that 11-9 win, hit it off of the Mets' Mike Remlinger. And what I thought was interesting going back and looking at that box score that I didn't realize, and if you go back a couple days talking with Noah Spyrick of Blake Street Banner, I hadn't thought about, well, what if Holiday was ruled out? Or what if there was instant replay if he was ruled out? What would have happened next? Who would have been on deck? Who would have been at the plate to maybe hit a walk-off home run at that point? Well, how did it come that Dante Bichette ended up coming to the plate? Well, Galarraga reached base on an error with two outs, and that set the scene for Bichette to hit that walk-off home run. And if you subscribe to the Rockies Insider newsletter, it's free. I highly recommend it. I am biased, but check that out, because the trivia question, which I don't know if I want to totally spoil that, but hopefully by now you've read it. You can pause or skip ahead a minute. But the question in there that I had for this week's Rockies Insider newsletter over on Substack is Dante Bichette, of course, a first generation ball player. His son Bo Bichette plays for the Toronto Blue Jays. Well, for the Mets that day were two second generation players that suited up. One was on the field at that time, another was not. Who were they for the 1995 Mets? The answer, skip ahead now. First baseman, David Segui, son of Diego, and catcher, Todd Hundley, son of Randy. What I also realized was there were, for the Rockies, three first-generation players. I wasn't sure if EY Sr. had played in that game. He didn't start the game. I think that's why I was initially confused, or why I had forgotten him. But Eric Young Sr., father of, surprise, Eric Young Jr., who also played for the Rockies. And don't forget reliever Bruce Ruffin, his son Chance, actually played in parts of two seasons with the Tigers and the Mariners. So Mets had two second-generation players. Rockies had three first-generation players. And oh yeah, Omar Olivares, who came in on relief for the Rockies, his father Ed also played in the show. So should be a fun day today down at Coors Field, with Bichette throwing out the first pitch. I don't really have a rundown of the festivities. I don't know that it's going to be an over-the-top affair. But if you're there, obviously there's going to be a recognition of the opening of Coors Field. I think they're rolling back some of the prices where it's like $5 for maybe like a beer and a hot dog. Don't quote me on that exactly. They've had multiple press releases about this, but that's kind of not my purview. That's just not something that I'm terribly interested or focused on. What I am focused on is a healthy future for the game of baseball. You might have seen in this past week a collision with Luis Arraez that looked like, I hate to say it, typical, because you know it does happen from time to time, but a collision at first base where Christian Walker was fielding a ground ball at first base and he sort of blocked out the pitcher from covering the bag. So second baseman Mauricio Dubon came over to first base and received the toss from Walker, and Luis Arraez came across and they had a collision, and it didn't look that serious at first, but if you look at the video, you can see Luis Arraez's neck, the way it just kind of snapped back, and he ended up going to the hospital. He did come back to the ballpark post-game, but it's really brought about a talking point that's been under the surface, I think, just a little bit in a lot of baseball circles, and I think because it's a little bit more extreme, it's something that you don't even see at the youth level, at least not in baseball. But it's a double first base. It's used in softball, naturally, to allow the runner to have their own path. And when you think about where the running lane is majority in foul territory. And yet we have a base that's entirely in fair territory. So there's been a discussion amongst folks inside of baseball if we could ever have a double first base. And it is extreme. And imagining what that would look like seems very, very drastic, because as someone who officiates and umpires youth baseball when I get some free time, which isn't a lot, but when I do that, you don't see double bases. You just don't see double bases at the youth level, at least not once you hit 11, 12 years old. You do in softball, but again, that's not baseball. That's softball. But if I had to make a decision now for the end of all time, yes, double first base, or no, we will never have it. We can't ever have it. I would err on the side of safety. I would err on the side of caution and say, yes, put double first base, double bases over at first base. And some of you listening to this who are traditionalists, like myself, might be shocked by something like this. And I think it's because the conversation has barely begun. And you might not have even heard about this incident. You might not have even heard about people talking about that in baseball. And again, it does seem so drastic. But baseball, forever, since its infancy, since the genesis of baseball, the game has evolved and taken various safety measures. When the game originated, players did not wear mitts at all. They didn't even wear gloves. And in fact, when they first started wearing gloves, they literally wore gloves. They were just leather gloves. That's it. Like almost like driving gloves, fingerless gloves to help them catch the ball. Like catchers were the first ones to wear it. And it really wasn't even to catch or receive the balls, to like knock it down to be able to pick it back up. And eventually it evolved. The first baseman's mitt even was something, because it looks so much different than all the other mitts, at least infield or outfielders. When Hank Greenberg invented that, it was essentially outlawed. But cooler heads prevailed, and sure enough, okay, you first baseman can have these specific type of mitts. Same thing with catchers. And so the game evolved in that way. Catcher's equipment as well. If you've ever gone to a baseball museum, you know how archaic some of that equipment has been across all sports, right? Even football. And then obviously you could argue, I think that, you know, maybe football should go back to more simpler helmets, because the more padding or the more perceived safety of helmets and helmet technology, the less safe I think it makes the game, because then you have guys, you have players going in head first, and you know, that's bad. But the evolution of mitts is not made it more unsafe. We're not having more injuries or fatalities or anything like that because of baseball mitts. Not at all. We did have a fatality when batters did not wear helmets. Ray Chapman in 1919, the only player to ever die on a baseball field. And he did die at the hospital, but still was hit and didn't last very long. Still to this day, one of my favorite baseball books. I probably should go back and read it again. Called by Mike Sewell, The Pitch That Killed. And it was all about Ray Chapman dying and the pitcher on the opposing team, Boston Red Sox starter Carl Mays, who was had a reputation as almost a headhunter, just a little bit. And so a fascinating book, great detail of everything that happened around that awful event. But there was a time in which guys didn't wear helmets, batting helmets. That was seemed like passe and, come on, you're a wimp. And sure, it actually changed the game. It altered the game because now pitchers didn't have the same level of fear that they can instill in opposing hitters by throwing inside. But for the safety of the hitters, that's better. And sure, you could say, well, now the pitcher is a little less safe. Okay, fine. But if we're really breaking things down percentage-wise, the game overall is safer with batting helmets, period. I did have to look this up because I didn't know it, and I don't think I've ever come across it. But the just like in the NHL, who was it? Craig McTavish? I don't know. But the last player in the NHL to not wear a helmet. So basically, hey, is your grandfathered in? You don't want to wear it? You don't have to wear it. You don't have to wear one of those visors in the NHL? Okay, you don't have to because you've been playing for a while. But the last guy to not wear a batting helmet at all, Bob Montgomery, 1979. It's like a backup catcher, I believe, with the Red Sox. That's crazy to think that in 1979 you were going up there against Nolan Ryan without a batting helmet. That's insane. Then we added ear flaps to the helmet. And most guys will just have the one flap over the side that faces the pitcher. It's kind of rare to have double ear flaps, which if you're talking about safety, get double ear flaps. Yes, you're not going to get hit by a pitch in the ear that's facing the catcher, but when you're running the bases, that could happen. That being said, the last guy to go without ear flaps, the old school helmet, where just the skull, Tim Raines, back in 2002. Thought it was Gary Carter, but no, it was in fact Tim Raines. And you know, look, there's going to be a point in time in which every player in the majors is going to be wearing that C flap, that little guard that goes from the ear flap down along the edge of the chin and along the jaw, that is. Reminds me of the other day when I couldn't come up with the word late bloomer. What was that about? But going down along the jaw, Giancarlo Stanton, probably the one that maybe made it the most famous, had that protection there. Kyle Farmer talked about it. I think it was last week at this point on the Drew Goodman podcast. That was a really cool interview. I definitely recommend you go and check that out. But he got hit in the face once by a pitch and then ended up coming back and started wearing that C flap coming off the ear flap to protect the cheek, to protect the jawline. Just gives you a little bit more protection there. It was something that Charlie Hayes actually wore for a while. He got hit by a pitch and he wore one of those old, it was almost like a football face mask. There's some photos that you can go and actually check out of Charlie Hayes when he was with the Rockies, when he wore that. So there'll come a time in which, again, everyone is wearing that C flap because it is just safer and that makes the game better. And once kids start to see what the big leaguers are doing, guess what? They're going to adopt it and then they are going to be safer too. That's a positive thing. Rob Manfred speaking at SBJ's 2025 CAA World Congress of Sports had a lot to offer. And probably the biggest thing to come out of that is Major League Baseball's interest in investing in softball at the professional level. Manfred said, quote, it's coming in the not too distant future. Softball has been a huge part of our youth development programs. He also added, the biggest determinant of fandom, referring to all sports, is did the kid play as a young person? And it's really important in women's sports because they're often the decider in the households as to how money gets spent. So baseball thinking, well, these young women become mothers, and if they love baseball because they played softball, well, now it's going to lead to more of those games. And there's plenty of women who love the NFL that never played football. So I don't know how totally true that is, but rationally speaking, or, you know, it does stand to reason that, yes, if you've played that, you are going to be a lot more involved. Very recently, Kim Ng, former general manager of the Miami Marlins, was actually named the commissioner of the new Athletes Unlimited Softball League. Check the website out, because there's a lot of cool stuff over there. It's the AUSL. They're kicking off their inaugural season on June 7th, and they've got four teams competing in a 30-game season. They're called Bandits, Blaze, Talons, and Volts. Next year in 2026 is when it'll become a city-based league. But for right now, it's pretty much just a touring league, a touring property, as they're calling it. And they'll play in about six different cities around the U.S., really the middle part of the country. That's about it. They start their season in Rosemont, Illinois. They're coming to Wichita, Kansas, Norman, Oklahoma. So those are two destinations that, you know, you want to take a seven-hour drive if you're from the Denver area, or if you're one of the fans out there, like shout out to the homie Jeff Terry in Wichita. Well, boom, that's right there in his backyard. He can go check that out. Chattanooga, Tennessee, Louisiana is going to be hosting some of these games, and the entire postseason will take place July 26th through 28th in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. ESPN is actually signed on as the founding broadcast partner of the AUSL. They're going to have at least 18 games on their platforms, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, this season. So, you know what? I'm not going to lie. I did look at my schedule. I did look at the drive time to get out to Wichita. Maybe the Wind Surge are in town that week or that weekend. I'm intrigued. I'm very interested. I actually, for the first time in over a decade, got back into officiating softball games. And let me tell you, man, the quality of softball in Colorado is really solid. And the girls, they have fun. That's the thing. Not a ton of the boys who play baseball are having that much fun. So that made it fun for me to participate in. And again, a quality sport, doesn't matter who's playing it, is exciting. So I'm very interested in seeing what the USL has to has to offer. Manfred also went on discussing the situations in Sacramento, in Tampa, with the A's and Rays playing at minor league facilities. Manfred said that the Sacramento situation, quote, or rather he says Sacramento sees itself as an expansion candidate, and rightfully so. He notes that ticket sales are up 66% compared to Oakland. Quote, Las Vegas is going to get built, so it's really a temporary play. I think that's a good negotiating tactic. I talked about that a little bit. Was it a month ago or was it 2 months ago at this point? But in a two-hour episode all about expansion in Major League Baseball and how Sacramento is going to be a player, and how the owner of the River Cats, and I think he owns some shares in the Kings as well, would like Sacramento to be put on the map. And Manfred, kind of, you know, giving that boost to Sacramento, is also helping boost the dollar amount of an expansion fee going forward, because the more cities that you have that want one of these expansion teams, the more money you're going to be able to extract from them. In terms of the Rays continuing to play at Steinbrenner Field beyond this season, quote, we remain optimistic that Tropicana Field will be ready in 2026. I think I heard somewhere of that St. Petersburg. I don't know if it's the government there or what, but they're going to cut up pieces of the roof of the Trop to sell. So if you're interested in that kind of memorabilia, check that out. Manfred also discussed the MLB TV licensing deal, saying, quote, I think that MLB.TV being available out there is part of our effort to make sure we're in the best position vis-a-vis the media buyers as possible. It's a great asset in the sense that you have a large number of subscribers that are very sticky and renew year after year. It can be an appealing part of a package going forward. There's a new term called, gosh, what was it? I was listening a little bit about this. I'm can't say I'm fascinated with the business side of sports, but when it comes to baseball, I do like learning new things. But the younger generation, they're being referred to as never cords because they've never had cords. They've always streamed everything in their life. So as time moves on, it's going to be more and more common for these kinds of licensing deals and apps and places to stream everything. And so MLB trying to get ahead of that and doing a good job so far, but it still might be a few years before you can see all 30 teams whenever and wherever you want. And finally, the least exciting part of what Manfred had to say this past week was regarding the salary cap, saying, quote, "Our owners haven't decided where we're going to be after the 2026 season when the CBA expires. Despite that fact, the one thing I am absolutely comfortable saying is if you're ever going to make a salary cap proposal, it's going to have a cap and a floor," end quote. I think the owners have definitely decided what they want to do after 2026. I mean, I think they decided that pretty much when they signed the last CBA. That's just good business right there. That's what you have to do to get your ducks in a row. You want to accomplish something with this CBA that gets you a lot closer to getting what you want in the next one. And you slowly work your way up there or try to do it very quickly, which, you know, could happen. But what you wanted to do at the end of 2026, you got some of that done with this last CBA. And if the owners really push for a cap, and I don't think that really matters if the players are pushing for a floor. I think the players are smart enough to not really push for it. They're going to talk publicly about a floor, but to have a floor means you're going to need a cap, and the Players Association doesn't want a cap, rightfully so. So you know what? Zip the lip a little bit when it comes to the floor. At Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons, MLB. And Rockies Insider over on YouTube and all the social media platforms. Go over there, subscribe, leave a comment on an old video. Even if it's just about a podcast that's audio only, I would really appreciate that. That helps the algorithm and puts me in the inbox, if you will, and the feeds of so many other folks that maybe, you know, are ready to turn the page with Nuggets and Avs seasons kind of winding down. So please go ahead and do that and help out your fellow fan, as it were. Appreciate the momentum as always. But as I like to say, momentum, it can only be as good as my next show. So, of course, I will talk to you then.